This episode is a clip of a conversation with Jackie and Bobby on The Katie McGrady Show, used with permission. Please enjoy.
I was just saying, and two, just people hearing a married couple that's just like a Catholic married couple, it's, I think we're normal, we're crazy. I mean, you know, we're not.
You're pretty normal. In comparison to the rest of the internet.
You know, and just that we love each other. I mean, right, babe? You love me. You still love me.
Long
right?
pause.
Long pause.
No, that we they do, everybody.
We do. And yeah, Bobby is, he is my best friend. I love him dearly. And I think he's great. I always say I'm going to be the first person at his canonization if he dies before me. I'll be the first person to say, like, my husband is a saintly man and he's a good man. And I think just the way that people don't think that marriage is possible, mm-hmm. Or even something that's worth doing. For me personally, when I was had my conversion, I prayed. I was like, Lord, please send me some people. Like, please send me some good marriages, because I don't know mm-hmm. if I've ever seen what they look like, you know.
Yeah.
So hopefully that we have a lot of young women following us, because I do a lot of women's sessions mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And, you know, for them, it's encouraging, like, okay, it is possible. You know, it is possible. And obviously marriage, people, humans, we aren't perfect. But we try to be as real as possible.
Yeah.
And
provide, you know, pretty balanced perspective, because
sure,
like, it feels
so.
Like there's a lot of, I mean, have you all seen this trend of the extremes? Like, it's got to be this.
Oh, never.
All
never
the way that. Over here. Like, you can't ever have a child inside of a hospital. It's got to be home birth, and you got to eat the placenta all the way to, like, you know, like, must be a scan, you know, whatever, like the extremes.
Right.
And it's nice to have somebody that's not in the extremes, maybe providing some of those balanced takes and conversation.
Yeah, and we are fully Catholic. We believe. I actually had a young girl ask me that. She's like, "Do you believe everything the church teaches?" And I'm like,
"Yeah,
yeah." Because when I researched what the church taught, I was like, "This is absolutely beautiful." Mm-hmm. And so I have a friend, you know who, Robert Fiducia. We love him. He said, "You know, be holy with the church, not holier than the church."
Mm.
And I think when people go to the extremes, they are being maybe they don't realize they're doing this, but they're giving opinions that the church never even, mm-hmm. they're the holier than the church. I'm like, no, I want to be holy with the church. And, you know, obviously we have opinions, but I hope people know that there are certain things that are my opinions. Mm-hmm. Maybe the church doesn't give opinions on this, but versus, you know, I'm like, of course I believe what the church teaches, because I believe Jesus Christ gave us those teachings. You know,
there's a desire for security. There's a desire for safety. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what the rules are and what the boundaries are. And so we want to jump to these extremes where the church leaves a lot of room for discernment mm-hmm. in many of these cases, but that is scary in a way. And even just the civility of not needing to weigh in on everything or letting a family's decisions be their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough in our internet. Everyone needs a hot take age.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like a perfect with the whole NFP thing, right? Some people are like, oh, it's contraception. Some people are like, NFP, what the heck? I can do whatever I want with my body. Those mm-hmm. are the two extremes, right? So the balancing is, listen, being formed and knowing the church's teaching, like, you are not part of someone's marriage. Like, every couple has to discern for themselves, being disciples, trying to be holy, what that means for them. Yeah. So, like, even NFP is a very interesting, you know, people can take very hot takes.
Have
on
y'all
it.
Tackled that one on the show yet?
We did a 4-part series on Ascension some time ago.
About NFP.
That was fun to do, because it was like, what is NFP? And then there was like a why we love NFP, and then we did a why I hate NFP.
Mm-hmm. Not freaking practical.
Yeah. I mean, just the stretch and the suffering and the cross of it. Mm-hmm. And yet this is the way that you honor nature. This is the way you honor the woman's fertility mm-hmm. and that the cycle. Versus trying to overpower it or rule it, that, and there's so just naming
and how
it.
To honor God too as well.
Yeah, at the end of it, mm-hmm. and so, but naming the inconvenience of it all in our mm-hmm. age that wants what we want when we want it.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's not to, you know, you want to, especially when you're trying to tell someone about NFP for the first time. You're like, it's awesome, it's great, and then you're like, but then there's also the reality mm-hmm. of that. It is a sacrifice. It is challenging. Mm-hmm. So,
but what's the alternative?
Right.
You know, it's like, Lord,
separated from the church.
Like,
and
Lord,
being
to,
in serious grave sin mm-hmm. of using contraception.
What's that, Lord, to whom else do we go?
Right.
Like, so in my moments of frustration with NFP, it's kind of like, well, what's the alternative? I'll give myself a speech of like, mm-hmm. what's the alternative? Is to like use your wife for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
or run to some other unhealthy outlets.
Mm-hmm. Which I loved. We both love JP II, St. John Paul II, because even in his Love Responsibility, his whole thesis is there are two ways to use somebody. Mm-hmm. You can use a woman as a baby maker. Mm-hmm. Right. And you can use her for just pleasure without the baby. So it's like I think you see the extremes in mm-hmm. both, like, oh, we demand to do this every day, you know, and to, like, I want to use my wife as a baby maker. And that's all it's for is babies. And then you see the other is like, no babies. We just want the pleasure. And so the church is so wise, the balance of that. And then for the couples to discern that mm-hmm. discernment is hard. It's very difficult. And it's all that stuff in between that every couple, you know, you're not in anyone's marriage
no.
at all. Like, you have no clue what's going on in someone else's marriage. So you can't discern for them. Mm-hmm. You just hope that they're formed disciples after the heart of Jesus. And you do the best you can, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I wrote a book about discernment.
We did with someone named Father Mike Schmitz.
Yeah.
Gosh, pray, golly gee.
Pray, decide, and don't worry.
5 steps to discerning God's will.
That's hey, good job.
And where can they buy that book?
That was some years ago. That was with Ascension. Yeah. And so that was fun to write. That was my bucket list book.
Mm.
Was before I die, I need to write this, which a lot of it was what I wish I would have known in my early 20s.
Yeah.
In discerning and being all in on my faith, mm-hmm. but wrestling with, am I called to be a priest? Mm-hmm. Where does God want me? So there's a lot of wisdom in there. That's some St. Ignatius principles. Stuff from Father Mike, stuff from our own lives and what we've learned along the way. So, I mean, that book has helped. We keep getting feedback on just 20, 30, even 40-year-old plus that it's helped to make some big decisions.
Yeah, discerning a job, discerning a vocation, just any kind of discernment to help with, you know, following Ignatius, the discernment, stuff like that. So I will say, Bobby, the books that we have written together, Bobby, my beautiful, lovely husband, has been the one to be like, I'm such a lazy sanguine sometimes that when it gets to the evening when the kids have gone to bed, I'm like, I don't want to. Like, I'm so tired. Yeah. Like, I just want to veg. And he's like, we have to write 500 words a night. I'm like, I don't want to. Like, when I have a project, I do it in like 4 days. Like, we're going to remodel our master bathroom. Like, and I do it in 4 days. But something that's like a long and slow, yeah. like, oh, Bobby is he's my dude. Like, he's the one that's like, we have to do this for 6 weeks every night. And I'm like, no, like, that's like death for me.
I like the grind. Jackie likes the blitz.
Hey, that's a really
that's a good
way.
Balance.
Yeah, like Bobby notices, like, whenever I have a project, I'm like project mindset. And
when
so
it starts, she doesn't stop.
He's like,
hyper-focus.
Yeah. Relentless.
ADHD. ADHD hyper-focus. I'm married to a man that is that. I mean, he did his master's in 13 months because he was like, I'm just going to do it.
Oh,
like, I'm just
going to
knock it out right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just if I have a project, I'm just like, right now, I want to kind of remodel our bathroom on the cheap. And I'm like, I can do this.
I can do this.
I just every night from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., which is what I did when we sold our other house.
That's true.
I remodeled our master bathroom in 4 days. And literally, we had 7 years to do it, mm-hmm. guys.
But you just you did
but
it
I did
final
it in
week.
4 days, yeah. the final week, the
when,
final countdown.
How ahead of time do you pack for a trip?
Oh, the 2 hours before?
2 hours before.
Maybe the night before.
How about you?
Like the 10 minutes before.
Oh, so y'all are late packers.
Well, for the kids, you have to start.
Oh, yeah. If it's with the kids, I start a week ahead of time.
You're headed out to a Wisconsin event. Do you like study the weather for 3 or 4 days ahead of time to like check your outfits? Or is that just an anxious brain thing that I do?
I will say, now that I've had my colors done.
Your colors done.
House of colors. My whole closet matches. Because I used to literally have 85% of my closet was black.
Was black and white, yeah.
Because
yeah.
of just the ease of packing. Because I'm like, I wish that I had a packing robot. If I could have any invention, it'd be a packing robot. I hate packing, mm-hmm. all this stuff. But like, literally, now since I've got my colors done, my stuff matches. So it kind of doesn't matter.
You just capsule anything.
I just put it all in there. You know, yeah.
Rose pointed out to me the other day, she watched me pack for it was a long trip. I had two events back to back. So I like needed to bring multiple. And it was like an adult event and a teen event in completely different climates.
Yeah.
So I had my bed was covered in clothes. And she went, Mom, why is all your stuff blue? I was like, no, it's not. And then I like look and I was like, oh my gosh, like it's all navy. I've never had my colors done. I don't even know if that works. But like everything just kind of is the same color wheel.
Yeah.
Because it's easier that way.
It makes it way easier. It is really. Yeah. I will say, though, if I were going to different climates, that is a much more difficult annoying thing to mm-hmm. pack for because you're like, oh gosh.
Where do I put this jacket?
I will say it's really funny when you are going somewhere from warm to warm, but you're connecting in Chicago and it's free and you have to stand out mm-hmm. in the
waiting for the little tram.
Like, yeah. You're like, I got a jacket because I'm going to Florida and I'm from California. Yep. Yeah, I've had that happen for sure. You're like in 20 degree weather, maybe zero, you know?
Yeah, no, I've really tried to minimize like Franciscan style, like what I need on a trip.
Mm-hmm. No, hashtag Marie Kondo, baby. You know, we're like, thank you for bringing me joy.
Get rid of it. I'm done with this.
No, I'm like down to two outfits. Like with the one I'm wearing.
You Mother Teresa. You have a pair of shoes.
However, there's always that nervous, like I need at least four pairs of underwear.
Well, yeah. What if you get stuck somewhere?
No. Can we tell about the time that Bobby forgot to bring pants to an event? Can we tell them about that time?
Oh yeah.
Were you wearing pants?
No,
we weren't flying. We were driving.
We were driving to Oklahoma from here for an event, and I was in gym shorts because it was like the evening before we drove up.
All the children coming?
No, I think one of our
just us.
My cousin was watching them.
And this is not like habitual. This is the first time I've done this. Where again, I'm laying my clothes out, but a kid came in and bothered me at some point.
Yeah,
that threw off my focus when I was packing.
Mm-hmm.
Blame it on the child.
I will blame it because this is not a normal thing to forget.
Right, right.
And it's not till we get to the hotel, either like I think the morning of.
Yeah.
I open the bag and I realize I don't have pants.
What'd you do?
Well, I weighed my options.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could have just committed to.
I'm in the gym shorts.
Giving this talk on a stage in gym shorts.
At a diocesan youth conference.
Was it teens or was it adults?
No, it was teens. Might not want to wear
safe
those.
Environment.
Yeah.
But if I'm behind a podium, I can maybe get away with it.
No.
Did
no.
you have like a polo in gym shorts?
Yeah. Well, I was committed to the comedy of it. Jackie's like, just go to the store and buy pants.
Yeah, go.
Because you
quick.
Had a car. That's a
thankfully yeah, we yeah. had
you
a
had
car.
A car.
We weren't stuck. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was a good thing. So we went to the store and bought pants real quick.
Got some pants. This summer, Tommy and I went to New York. So we drove up to Scranton, dropped the kids off, went to New York for 3 days. Drove to Philly to catch a flight for me to get to Pittsburgh for Steubenville. So it was like one of those, I've got a pack for multiple scenarios. And in the Philly Marriott, the Marriott at the Philadelphia airport, while Tommy was actually finishing his last grad school assignment, he finished in that hotel. I decided to repack my bag and completely forgot the packing cube with all my underwear. Get to Steubenville the next morning, like 10:30 a.m. They let me check into the Best Western early. I'm going to like unpack my stuff. I'm going to iron all my clothes for this 3 very intense days of work. And I cannot find that packing cube. I text Tommy, who is sitting at a diner in Philly with an old college friend. And I was like, can you just check in that duffel bag real quick? And he sends me a picture of it. So I had to do the order on Walmart. And somebody from Steubenville had to drive me to go do a pickup. And they were so kind, like hospitality. Oh, well, we can go get whatever you need. And I was like, nope, you cannot.
No, you
can't.
Like,
I am
no,
just going to order these items for myself, and you're just not going to look at me while I'm waiting in the car.
That's like even more awkward than if they were getting you like feminine sanitation products.
Yeah. That I would have just suffered through.
Where I think men would, I would commit to it. Be like, yeah, just pick up the size, whatever, Fruit of the Loom.
Yeah, because men,
it happened to Father John Burns at Gibbon a couple, his bag got lost, and like, a nun had to go to the store for him because she was the hospitality coordinator. He got a Garfield t-shirt out of it. She like laughed when she saw the Garfield t-shirt. Was like, you can sleep in this, Father. But I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago, Jackie. By the way, we're here with Jackie Bobby Angel on the Katie McGrady Show. I'm just hanging out with my friends in their house.
Yeah.
The extremes. Like our society has gone to the extremes. You work in mental health. You've traveled the country and spent a lot of time with people. Why do you think we've gone to these extremes in our culture? What's caused that?
Well, one of the easiest things is that the extremes are easier and they provide comfort. I've had this told to me for years, like with chastity, it's like, just give me the rules. Because almost it's easier on one side to have just the rules and kind of the scrupulosity, like, and obviously people, Bobby could tell you this, the people who struggle with scrupulosity want rules. And then on the other side, there's people like, don't tell me what to do. And so you always have, but that's virtue. Like you always have the extremes of the middle of virtue. But I think personally, because it's much more difficult to be in the middle of the virtuous path, it's much more, and I feel like we're just, I don't know if it's like laziness or also just with the last few years, just anger and maybe the algorithm of social media, whoever is the louder, angrier person gets the more views, the more likes. So we have seen people that we know that just the louder you are, the more clicks you get, the more angry you are, the more clicks you get, the more divisive, the more clicks you get.
More money.
So influencers, I think, unfortunately, will go to the extremes because it goes to clicks, likes, money. Mm-hmm. And to be in the middle is not very lucrative.
No.
people don't want balanced. Now, some people want balanced opinions, but that's very few people. Most people, even for me, I'm like, oh, give me all, you know, like spill the tea, baby. Mm-hmm. You know, like I want to know it, you know, like what's going on with Princess Kate. Give me all the conspiracy theories.
She's been spotted.
Right.
But is it really her?
Is it really her?
Is no, her double? It looked like guys, some Christmas decorations in the background.
There's her double. Anyway, so it's just funny. Like I think in the human person, like we like the drama. Mm-hmm. We like it gets to our kind of base part of our anger and our outrage. So, Bobby, from the psychology perspective,
I feel like I stumbled into psychology. Like it chose me. I didn't choose it. I've gotten connected with Catholic Psych, and I've been trained in their mentorship program. And so I'm working alongside them as a partner mentor, and it's been beautiful work. And there's definitely like a tribal nature to some of this stuff. Like, again, with the devices, the internet, how we kind of have these new tribes of I'm this or I'm that, and then you kind of have these built-in enemies. You're either
for me or against me. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of feeds the animalistic part of our brain in a way. And like as Jackie said, there's a desire for security that the rules provide, mm-hmm. or that here's the line, and like, but we have to love our enemies, and we have to traverse that line, and we have to figure out a way to be with and understand and empathize and have mercy on the other. And we were talking about recording, about therapy as a whole. It's interesting how the pendulum is swinging, mm-hmm. from this, like, very much, again, overindulgence in our feelings, in a sense where, like, I can't even be challenged. I need a safe space. I need all these comforts. I need to, now we're kind of demonizing therapy, mm-hmm. even addressing our feelings, and we just need to suck it up, and we just need more grit, and we just need, and
there's got to be a balance
because we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. There is something to, like, a generation that never sat with their feelings, that mm-hmm. always stuffed it down,
like, just get over it, move on, we don't care about your trauma,
shove it down.
We don't talk about Bruno to like, oh, the pendulum swinging so far that now whatever I subjectively feel must be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Or is truth, even.
So, and you must exist in my
truth.
Reality, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so now we're seeing, and there's been a lot of malicious things done in the name of that. Mm-hmm. So it's right, you're going to see some pushback now. But again, it just swings to the other end again. And
instead of the virtuous middle, which is, listen, we are human beings, and we have feelings, and we've had experiences, like traumatic experiences, you know, and our feelings, they're neutral. Like, they're not bad.
Right, right.
And that stuffing down stuff is not good for us or for our bodies. But yeah, then it's like also the truth of resiliency, like learning how to, I feel like as a parent, you always are trying to learn that balance, mm-hmm. the balance of really being attuned to your kids.
Right.
And to their emotions and not wanting to shame them. But then there's also the balance, like, okay.
Be tough.
But yeah, how do we get them to toughen up as well, and like have to learn from failure? Like, failure is actually a good thing because from your failures you learn. So even as a parent, you're always trying to learn that balance, mm-hmm. of, I feel like that one book that I can't remember what it was called, but it was like how to keep your kids faithful. Mm-hmm. And it essentially said every kid who stayed faithful, their parents were authoritative but warm. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like many of us were raised by families who were one or the other. They were either too authoritarian and kids left their faith, or they were just like, do whatever you want. And then the kids have no truth. There's no truth. And so it's kind of this confusion. But there's always, even in parenting, that balance. So I feel like, Bobby, with the work you're doing, you know, you're always trying to find, again, that middle, that balance of...
It's very JP2 and that personalistic approach, mm-hmm. of... honor the subjective and the human person and what they're experiencing, while also keeping one foot on the shore,
tethered
to objective reality and the truth that God has given us. What does it mean to be man and woman? Mm-hmm. What does it look like to flourish and to integrate?
Yeah,
like we're fragmented. There's so much disintegration.
Yeah,
and it's the long, slow journey of being integrated is what it means to be fully human.
Well, like, sometimes you realize like you watch your kid processing something and you're like, oh, and that's a core memory that's being developed in real time. And how I handle this in this precise moment will either show up in therapy in their 30s or will be the thing that they like point to as like, and that's when I figured it all out. And that's kind of terrifying. Rose, this was back in the fall. Was it the fall? Was it the early? It must have been the early spring. She called one day and the school called and they said that she wasn't feeling well. And that morning, she had heard me say to Tommy that the day before I'd gotten lightheaded. And so the lady on the phone was telling me, yeah, Rose is saying she's feeling a little lightheaded. And I was like, she's playing me. Like, she's testing my patience. So I drive to school to pick her up because, like, if the kid's lightheaded, they're going to send her home kind of thing. Get her in the car and, like, ready to just wail on her. Not physically, like, just, like, yell at her because I'm frustrated that, like, this is completely rerouted my day. You're missing a half a day of school because you're lightheaded. You look fine. You don't have a fever. You weren't sick this morning. Like, what the hell's going on? And on the drive home, it came out of her that she had... So she has this very dear friend that she's known pretty much her whole life. They've, like, been together since 2 years old in daycare. And the day before on the playground, he had stopped playing a game with her to go play with these boys. And it's like this happens in first and second grade, right? Like the boys start to play with the boys and the girls start to play with the girls. And like, you know, the boy might get picked on if he's playing with the girls or vice versa. And so Rose that morning had woken up and wrote a note that said, "What's the plan, Christian?" And was going to give it to him in the hallway before recess so they could like make a plan. And she had like thought about it and prepared for it. And when she went to go hand him the note, there's a kid, he's going to remain nameless on the, because I wanted to go punch this kid in the throat. She went to go hand him the note and the kid knocked it out of her hand and made fun of her. So she was embarrassed. Like she felt shame. And then they went to music class, and in music class, these two little girls were like keeping a secret from her. So then it was like piling on, like she's feeling all these emotions. And so she told the music teacher she didn't feel good. And so the music teacher sent her to the office. And on the way to the office, she fell on like this metal ramp and like banged her knees up. So she just had like a horrible 20 minutes. And all she wanted was her mom to come get her from school. Mm. And my immediate assumption was, you're manipulating the situation. Like you should tough it up. And then she tells me all this. And I realized like she was, how do you handle those emotions in that moment? And it's like, do you sit there and be like, this is trauma. This kid knocked something out of your hand. Or do you sit like, yeah, sometimes kids are crappy to other kids. And like, we're going to be resilient through this, but we're also allowed to feel our feelings. Cause she went and changed into her pajamas and like got in bed for 30 minutes and just like was upset. And it was a hard, like, how do you, is that something I send her to a therapist for? I don't think so. Like, I don't think that that's a core memory to the point of, I'm never going to write a note to my friend again. But at the same time, I want to sit with her in those emotions. There's this new book, Bad Therapy, by Abigail Schreier, which I really liked her Irreversible Damage book. So I think I'm going to like this. And she's like basically saying that's the resiliency that our kids need. Like these mean moments from other kids are what toughens them up in the world. But then there's also the gentle parenting theory of actually like we need our kids to be able to process that shame and process that embarrassment so that they don't either perpetuate the cycle with another kid or that they don't think that like something's wrong with them. How do y'all find that balance with your gaggle of children? Sorry, that was a very long example.
No, but you can imagine if you hadn't listened,
right,
how you would have perhaps piled on the shame after.
Yeah, just shutting her down.
Yeah,
just
saying. And now I can't. Yeah. Now there's some level, a part of her says, I can't even go to my mom.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
So the difficulty in, I think X has caused the situation and I want to react in such a way, mm-hmm. but actually receiving your daughter first and then listening mm-hmm. to get to like what's really going on. And then, yeah, letting her feel what she's feeling, but also not wallow in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think with us, it's telling the kids, like, your feelings aren't, like, it's okay to feel. It's okay to feel angry. It's okay to feel sad. Like, it's okay to have emotions. Now, what we do with them, like hitting your brother in the face is not,
you know. And there will be a consequence for that. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So I feel like maybe when our parents shut us down in our feelings, like, I have a friend who was always very joyful. And when she started feeling feelings of depression, everyone's like, oh, come on.
Suck it up.
And that's not you. And it's like, yeah, but what if it? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the sad thing is there are so many, I've heard parents just kind of dismiss their kids' depression. And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, they need to go see somebody. Please go to a therapist. Mm-hmm. If they're having like suicidal thoughts, please, you know? And so with our children, it's like, okay, it's okay to feel your feelings, but we have to learn how to regulate our emotions and how to deal with our emotions. Because even the thing I see our kids, like the light bulbs go off in their head when they realize that mom and dad also are not perfect.
And have feelings.
Oh my gosh, when we have apologized to our kids, and the whole attachment theory, the repair is the most important. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to be able to be perfect parents all the time. And we yell at our kids, we blow up because we aren't able, we're not fully integrated. And so when we apologize to our kids, we're like, oh my gosh, mommy and daddy aren't perfect, but they just apologize and said, I'm sorry for yelling. I'm sorry for raising my voice at you. Will you forgive me? And the times that I have told my children that I'm not perfect, they're like, oh, really? Mm-hmm. You know, like one time I said, you know what my favorite food is? Like what I wish I could eat all the time. They're like, what, broccoli? And I'm like, candy. And they go, oh, yeah. They were like scandalized. What?
Mom's said, knocked off the pedestal for a moment.
Yeah. I wish I could eat candy all the time. Mm-hmm. I said, Reese's peanut butter. I just started naming. They were like, I said, but here's the
you
deal.
You know about those?
I was like, if I ate candy all the time, what would happen? Like, you know, it's not good for my body just mm-hmm. to eat sugar all day. And so, and then also with masks, like when they get distracted and they're little squirrels, I'm a squirrel too. And I said, listen, I get distracted. And they're like, oh, you do?
Yeah.
So I feel like when they see mom and dad are not perfect, like we are still struggling. We still, their eyes are just like, oh my gosh, like you're human beings. And I think most of us were raised where we kind of thought mom and dad act like they're perfect. And they never apologized. They never said sorry. They never. So we kind of, and then what happens? You're kind of shattered at some age, like, oh no, they're really not perfect. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So anyways, I think the balance is like your emotions are okay. It's okay to feel them. And we just have to learn what do you do when you feel those emotions? Yeah. Like, how do you work through that? And how do you choose the good?
Yeah.
We're at this beautiful point in, I'll say, church history of this, I'd say, union of like healthy psychology with Catholic anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing like the work of Dr. Bob Schutz or Dr. Greg Bataro and a lot of others, and this whole integrating internal family systems, which is like the parts language, all over Catholic and Protestant alike circles mm-hmm. right now, to see like, hey, there's a lot of good stuff in some of these psychological disciplines that we can use that can really help people and bring about some real healing. And the Abigail Schreier, so I enjoyed her first book, Irreversible Damage. And I think her eyes were open she's not religious.
No, but all she was raised, I think, Jewish.
Jewish, yeah. But culturally Jewish. And her eyes were really open to how the transgender education, it's so... the social contagion in a way, especially for girls. So she wrote her first book on that. And I think her eyes were open to, it's not just the internet and social media.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the therapeutic disciplines that are fueling this too.
Mm-hmm.
To where it's like your first visit, you don't feel incongruence with your body, or you hate being a girl because of all these complications, or you have a cycle or whatever. Well, you must be a man. Let's get you on testosterone. Yeah. So she's connecting her book is really, because I listened to an interview she did and it was fascinating. But you see the reaction against therapy as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll say like, there's a place for therapy, but particularly for kids, there are some malicious actors who have agendas. And her call to take back your parental authority, don't outsource it to a therapist at the first sign of trouble.
Yeah.
Like there is something to, you're going through a hard time at school. Like how do we...
Let's process that.
Or even just the anxiety so many young people are feeling, it's because they weren't trusted with any kind of autonomy.
Right.
Like you can walk yourself to the park. Like you can make these decisions on your own, which is such a...
Yeah.
It's such this like tightrope, because depending on what state in the United
Where
States
you are,
live in...
Yeah.
You could get CPS called on you for just letting your kid walk down the street.
I saw a tweet the other day of, you know, these Reddit threads that get screenshotted. And it was like this mom whose 13-year-old son was at his friend's house to play video games. And then she found out that the mom there had another friend come over for like a coffee or something. And so she was upset that her son was in the house with an adult that she did not know. And I was like, you know, if my six-year-old was over at like a sleepover, which we're a no sleepover family, but like if she was over for a play date and like there maybe like as a six-year-old mom, my Spidey tends to be like, eh, I'd like to at least know who else is coming in and out of the house. But a 13-year-old boy there to play video games with another 13-year-old boy, like he's a young man who's like learning how to navigate the world, and you as mom swooping in to bring him home because, you know, Miss Doris next door popped over. Like you're teaching that kid
fear.
You're teaching that kid stranger danger to the extreme, which is why we're seeing kids are dating less. They're not getting their driver's licenses. They're staying closer to home for college. Like it's this interesting pathologizing of a, I also don't think we fully processed 2020. That's a whole other conversation. Because like the sophomores of today were the middle schoolers during the world shutdown. And like they were terrified. And we didn't help them process any of that well. We could keep going. My producer's going to tell me our segments need to be kept a little shorter. We'll have to do another one of these at some point.
And we'll just keep the conversation going. When the recording button stops.
I'm going to eat a little bit more. I'm going to try the coffee cake next. Yeah.